So I spent the summer after my junior year of high school working on a volunteer trail crew in an Idaho wilderness area. We were a group of six teens and two adults hacking away at the brush, digging drainage ditches, and swatting flies. First, we had to make our own base camp. We arrived at the spot where we would call home for the summer, and we picked an area that was close enough to a cool, clear stream, which would be our shower and our drinking water and our cooking water for the entirety of the summer. We lashed a sturdy tarp among a space in the trees. We hung all our food in 5 gallon buckets 20 feet up in the trees. One of the kids literally put on like a hard hat and a harness and knew how to climb a tree high enough to string all our food up there. We had an elaborate pulley system to get it down. This was all, of course, to protect it from the bears. And we set up our tents around the edge of this tarp. And the tarp sheltered our common area. This was where we cooked on propane camping stoves, where we dined on dried, reconstituted hummus and beans, and told fart jokes. We were six teens living off of reconstituted dried beans and hummus, so there was a lot of that. But before we could do any of that cooking and eating and joking, we needed a table. And that was my chore for base camp build day. Our adult leaders instructed me and one other kid named Eric to grab a bow saw and a bunch of rope and build a kitchen table out of whatever we could find in the forest. Eric and I gaped at each other. We had only just met the day before, and neither of us had made so much as a wooden spoon. It was immediately obvious that we wouldn't be able to work with anything thicker than like this. So we thought we could maybe make a raft, kind of like what we figured Tom Sawyer and Jim made, and then add legs. So we gathered logs of similar diameter and we sawed them all to the same length. And we lashed them together with rope. And we left a gap on both sides and the legs stuck up through the gap. And we just tied it a lot. And we had cross beams for support on both sides. I actually have a picture I'm gonna show you. Make it big. Can you all see that? You can see the large quantities of rope. You can also notice how proud we are and what a ham I am. I guess not much has changed. But this table somehow lasted the whole time we called base camp home. We prepared breakfast, every breakfast and dinner on that table. We packed every trail lunch on that table. It was a little wobbly, but it faithfully held our cookware, two camping stoves, and it withstood all the determined chopping of hungry 16-year-olds with pocket knives and big carrots. My caption next to that picture in the photo album I took it out of, I put together the album right after that summer. The caption next to that table picture says, "We built this." Actually, many of the captions in that photo album say that. I took pictures of all our projects, a set of steps along the trail. We built this. A handrail along a steep slope. We built this. A culvert. We built this. We were a group of six kids and two adults who built the home that we lived in for the summer. And we built the trail improvements that we hiked on all summer. Everywhere we looked, we could see the good things that we built, made from the gifts of the forest and the tools we had brought with us. made out of our own sweat and good-natured effort, all of us working together. We can say this about our church, too. We can look around this building, at the programs we run, the experiences we share, the community we love, the staff that you all pay, and we can say to one another, we built this. Here at church, we have inherited many of these good things from previous generations. It's not exactly like me and Eric wandering around the woods with nothing but logs and rope, but we have kept the good things of this congregation going, and we have created new ones out of our own sweat and good-natured effort, all of us working together. We built this. And we build it not just with our time and talent, but also with our treasure. I mean money, to be clear. I just like to call it treasure because alliteration is catchy. When we make our pledges each year, when we pay our portion of what we have promised, we are ensuring that we have rope and logs that we can lash together. And so we can build this beautiful and imperfect but sturdy table, this communal table that nourishes our community of support, spiritual growth, and service in the world. On this first Sunday in March, we have a new worship theme. And so we are again finding ourselves at an intersection of two themes. Last month's was beloved community, and this month is commitment. This is the perfect intersection for the stewardship campaign kickoff sermon, or as I have joked maybe by now too many times, the Sermon on the Mount. It is time yet again to pledge our support for our congregation for another year. It is only because of our shared commitment that we have a congregation to practice beloved community in. It is only because all of us pitch in that we can gather around this table that we have built for each other and for future generations. The way we gather around this table that we have built is another reason that it is so precious. Remember the story of the people gathered around the table with long spoons? It's an old folktale told in many cultures around the world and recounted in many a UU church, including this one. The story goes that there was an old woman who wished to know the difference between heaven and hell. So she was first brought to a great dining hall with round tables piled high with delicious foods. And she saw that the people sitting around the tables were desperately hungry. They each had spoons, but their spoons were 3 feet long. They could reach the food at the center of the table, but they couldn't get it back to their mouths. Their spoons were just too long. These people cried out in frustration and hunger. "Enough! I have seen hell," said this woman. She was then brought to another dining hall with the same round tables piled high with this amazing feast and the same long spoons, but this time it was heaven. The people were laughing and eating to their heart's content because they had figured out that they could feed each other across the table. Theirs was a banquet of love. Us Unitarian Universalists don't believe in hell, which is to say, we don't believe in eternal damnation. That's the Universalist part of our name. We may instead think of hell as those places here on earth where we have forgotten how to share one another with one another, where we don't realize that we can feed each other across the table. On the other hand, when we do share with one another, we can all enjoy the gifts of this life that much more. And we can fight the impacts of not sharing by sharing. On a personal level if one of us is having a hard time, we can be there for each other. We don't have to go through it alone. We aspire to have such a love banquet here at church. We are here to feed each other across this table, to practice beloved community, so that we may be part of bringing it to life here on earth. Church is not always a total love fest. It's not actually heaven on earth. We all know this. The work of the church can be tedious. The people of the church can be cranky. This includes the minister. The basement of the church can be floody. UCC minister and president of Andover Newton Theological School, which is now at Yale, Reverend Martin Copenhaver wrote, "On a number of occasions, I have hiked in the interior reaches of the Grand Canyon. To me, it is a holy place, the most vaulted of natural Gothic cathedrals. It's hard not to feel close to God there, not only because of what is present, but also due to what is largely absent, the demands of living in community. The buttes don't quarrel with each other. The California condors make no demands of the living. The rollicking streams offer only comforting words. There is no need to raise money for a sanctuary roof because the blue sky has already supplied it." So to me, the affirmation that God can be found outside the church has never seemed like much of a claim. The true wonder is that God can be found inside the church, he writes, among quirky, flawed, and broken people who may have little in common and yet are bound to one another. After all, he concludes, if you can find God here, you can find God anywhere. So how is it that God, or understood another way, a greater good, can be found even among the quarreling and quirky people who gather, well, who used to gather and who will once again still yet gather in a building with all its mundane demands for maintenance and repair? It is because we built this. We who are imperfect beings, with all our human shortcomings, living in a broken world, still we choose to practice our faith in the possibility of greater good and to practice it together. We need this place. We need sacred space and time set apart from our everyday lives, lives that can be hectic or lonely or both. We need a community of belonging. We need somewhere that supports us in living by our principles. We need the promise that once in a while we might even find a moment of peace or reflection or inspiration. We're just regular folks, but we know how to build things. Things that we try to make reflect our deepest values. Things that are inspired by the love and care of those who came before us. And inspired by the knowledge that there will be those who come after us. And so year after year, we answer this call to shared commitment. Stewardship is caring for the table so that we may care for one another across the table. And so we commit to being stewards of this house of worship, where week after week, we keep promising to ourselves and each other that we will be guided by a doctrine of love, a law of service, and a quest for truth. Amen, and may it be so.